The book of Ruth shows us that what is at work in the universe through the Lord is something greater than just being a victim or being the recipient of injustice and seeking retribution, getting justice. There's something more. Now, the book of Ruth drops us into the story of the life of Israel during the times of the judges. And if you've read the book of Judges, you've read, and it's a repeated frame in the book of Judges, that in those days, Israel had no king, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes. That's really just another way of saying it was every man for himself. Right? In a world where people live as if it is every man for himself, it's easy for that world and for life to be reduced to life's hard and then you die. But that's not the story in which we find ourselves in. God has not left his creation to work out things by themselves or itself, nor has he left us to ourselves. Not only is God going to send, as we, from Ruth's vantage point, send his king into the world, and we learn that as we've been looking at the life of David, God's going to send his king, but that same king is going to overcome through something more than just the world of injustice and the world in which we try and seek retribution. And as we begin to look at this book of Ruth this morning, we're going to be looking at three things. We're going to look at the brokenness, we're going to look at the broken, and then we're going to look at the blessing. Now, I want to remind you of the artwork that's in the foyer. All of that artwork was inspired by the book of Ruth, and we're going to be using some of that in the course of the next couple of weeks, and I'm going to be making reference to that. One of those pieces actually can't hang on the wall. It's an instrumental piano piece called The Threshing Floor, which tells in musical notes the flow or the events of Ruth chapter 3. And I'm hoping that it's going to serve for us as sort of a theme song for these next couple of weeks. And I've asked Michael, he's going to come forward and he's going to play that piece, and afterwards Janie Hughes will come forward and read this morning's passage. Michael, would you play for us? And this is just, it's an opportunity for you to kind of make a transition and to be ready to hear what it is that the Lord has for us and for you.
Ruth chapter 1. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephraimites from Bethlehem in Judah. They went into the country of Moab and remained there, but Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. These took Moabite wives. The names of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth. They lived there about 10 years, and both Mahlon and Chilion died, so that the woman was left without her two sons and her husband. Verse 6. Then she rose with her daughters-in-law to return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and given them food. So she set out from the place where she was with her two daughters-in-law, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. But Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go, return each of you to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband." Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. And they said to her, "No, we will return with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may become your husbands? Turn back, my daughters. Go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, even if I should have a husband this night and should bear sons, would you therefore wait until they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me." Then they lifted up their voices and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And she said, "See, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law." But Ruth said, "Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord do so to me and more, also, if anything but death parts me from you." And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more. Verse 19. So the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem. And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the woman said, "Is this Naomi?" She said to them, "Don't call me Naomi. Do not call me Naomi. Call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me, and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me?" So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, with her, who returned from the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest.
Okay, thank you, Janie. All right, so starting here, the brokenness. There's several clear and veiled descriptions of the brokenness that's in the world. The first one is in that opening line that I've mentioned already, that in the days when the judges ruled. And it speaks to a time and to a place when the land had not yet been fully subdued by Israel. And so they hadn't come into the promises. It hadn't been fully realized. It was in some measure like the Wild West. People lived as if they had to take matters into their own hands. And if you lived in a land where there wasn't a king, you can imagine it was very easy for you to believe that what I'm going to get, I'm going to have to get myself. Now, another sign of the brokenness that was there is that there's a famine in the land. Famine was a sign of judgment at this time, and it was a call to repentance. The health of the land was like a spiritual barometer for the people of Israel. In Deuteronomy 28:22 through 24, the Lord tells his people what it will happen to them upon their entering into the land if they fall into covenant unfaithfulness, if they break the terms of the covenant. And we read, the Lord will send on you curses, confusion, and frustration in all that you undertake to do until you are destroyed and perish quickly on account of your evil deeds, because you have forsaken me. The Lord will make the pestilence stick to you until he has consumed you off the land and you that you are entering to take possession of it. The Lord will strike you with wasting disease and with fever, inflammation, and fiery heat, and with drought, and with blight, and with mildew. They shall pursue you until you perish, and the heavens over your head shall be bronze, and the earth under you shall be iron. The Lord will make the rain of your land powder, not R-E-I-G-N, right? The R-A-I-N is going to come down as powder. From heaven, dust shall come down on you until you're destroyed. Right? So that there's famine in the land is like a huge red flag. So the brokenness, right, it's highlighted by the fact that the famine has come to Bethlehem. Bethlehem means house, Bethlehem, bet house of bread. Bethlehem was Judah's bread basket. And instead of loaves, there are empty baskets and there are empty bellies. A third sign of the brokenness is that there's a man named Elimelech. Elimelech means God is my king. And that this man, Elimelech, would have to leave the kingdom and sojourn in the foreign land of Moab is a third sign of how bad things are. Moab was the land of Abraham's nephew Lot. It was the land that was on the northeast corner of the shore of the Dead Sea, beyond on the other side to the east of the Jordan River. It was the land that Israel lived in as they prepared to enter into the promised land when they were coming out of Egypt. Now the God of the people of Moab was named Chemosh. And Chemosh was one whom the Romans related to as Ares. Chemosh was an avenger god. Chemosh was a god of retribution in all of its worst examples. Chemosh was worshipped through human sacrifice, and the human sacrifice of a militaristic capital punishment, that the enemies of Moab were sacrificed to the god of Moab. Now, you can expect, when expecting that one is going to get what they deserve in this life is a reality under which we all live. But Moab deified it. They deified the impulse to make sure that other people were going to get what they deserved. And if you live that way, if you live your life saying, I'm going to make sure other people get what they deserve, the question begs asking, what is it that you're really worshiping? Right? If your heart is full of revenge and bitterness and resentment, right, you should be asking yourself, what are you really serving? Now, Ruth is a beautiful love story. You know, we love the story of Ruth. But it is much a story that is a polemic against the god of Moab, Chemosh, and an apologetic for the god of Israel. It is a polemic that is an argument against living a life in which one takes the matter of settling accounts into their own hands and to work, you know, the payback themselves. Right? Imagine living in a world, we like the saying, you know, we kind of chuckle when we say it, but can you imagine what it would be like if we lived in a world where everybody walked around and said, I don't get mad, I get even. That's not a good place. So that's the third thing. The fourth thing, the names of the sons of Naomi and Elimelech. They speak to the brokenness of the world. Their names are Mahlon and Chilion, which mean sickness and wasting. Right? There's more that's going on in their names than the irony then more, there's more ironic, or there's more irony in the fact that they do not thrive. Right? They take wives and their marriages bear no children. Now, Orpah, who is one of the Moabite women who becomes the wife of one of the sons, it refers to the neck. It can refer to like a gazelle, right? It can refer to a beautiful feature. But it could also refer to maybe an unpleasant personality trait, like being stiff-necked. What might have been a physical trait maybe was identified with a character flaw. Ruth's name, though, means companion or friend. And it's in this season of famine and wasting and stubbornness and sojourning in a foreign land and finally death that companion can speak a word of hope. Naomi, it seems, as we read this first chapter, has not found herself surrounded by the companions of blessing, of thriving, of fruitfulness. The book of Ruth begins in a world which does not seem to be working and does not seem to be living up to the expectations and hopes of the people who are living in it. Naomi is left childless, a widow with two other widows. And friends, threefold widowdom is not a good place to be in a world in which it is all up to you. It doesn't start out sounding like this is going to be a hopeful story. So that's the brokenness of the world. The second is the broken. Right, the first bit of news that sounds positive is found in verse 6, where we read that Naomi had heard that from the fields of Moab, in the fields of Moab, that the Lord had visited his people. That's why we're in Ruth in Advent, right? That little key there. The Lord had visited his people and given them food. Now, for a widow in a foreign land, there are no more options but to return to where you came from. The news that the Lord had visited his people and given them food sounds like big news, but I wonder how often the greeting, Merry Christmas, or how often singing Joy to the World is sung without any awareness of the personal connection and significance of what is being said or sung. How often do we do that? We believe this. And how disconnected can we be from that? It's just as easily imaginable that the good news is unrecognized by Ruth. By Naomi. She has to go back. You know, we're the sorts of people who kind of discount the good news that we hear about sometimes. Right, we say, yes, that sounds like good news, but I don't believe that good news has anything to do with me. That's good news for other people. It's about others and it's for others. Okay, so the broken, right? The broken people who are in this passage. Now, the brokenness of the characters is seen in the fact that they have no rest. Right, the world is full of tragedy. The tragedy of widows and of mothers who have lost their children. This is not unusual in the ancient Near East. But there is in every trial and a longing that someday there might be rest. There might be a place of peace, of righting what has gone wrong. For the two widowed daughters-in-law, there's the potential hope in their mother's house. And Orpah and Ruth are young enough to hope that they may have rest among their own people. And this search for rest is one of the great themes in the book of Ruth. But the brokenness is worse because Naomi can offer them no rest. Anyone, right, who loves someone enough to want their blessing, someone who was loved and loved someone, right? If they were so hopeless that they were to say to you, you are better off without me. that speaks to how broken Naomi is by this. This is where Naomi is, and it's what she's saying. Right? Orpah and Ruth's mothers and families could hope to find husbands for them and among their kinsmen. But with Naomi, there's no hope of that. So not only is Naomi broken, but she's barren in her brokenness. And here Naomi speaks of, there's kind of this little thing that the author of the book of Ruth assumes that we understand, but seems very strange to us, and is a practice in the ancient Near East called levirate marriage. And levirate marriage required the brother-in-law of a widow to take his brother's widowed wife and to have children by her so that his brother's name would continue. This was something that was practiced along many cultures at the time. In all of this, right, is bound up the obligations of people to the land that they are inhabiting, that is the Lord's land. And the responsibility of the nearest of kin, the kinsman redeemer to his relations. And we're going to take up kind of those themes in a couple weeks. Tim's going to talk to us about the kinsman redeemer and about levirate marriage and about the land. But Naomi is saying to them, she says, I have no other sons who could take you. And even if I started today, right, even if I did, it would be too little too late. She says, it is exceedingly bitter for me for your sake, that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. Right? And that really, that right there is the greatest breaking. Naomi finds herself in a place of believing that her breaking is the Lord's doing. Right, it seems to her that in these circumstances that the hand of the Lord that could have provided in a famine, that could have protected her from tragedy, that could have delivered from death, certainly could provide comfort in the midst of all of this loss. But it seems for Naomi that that hand has been employed against her to strike her, to push her away. And it's very much a Job-like moment for her, right? And these tragic, these circumstances and the oppression in which she feels has worked to change her. When she arrives back in Bethlehem, the people are surprised to see her in the state that she's in. It's not that they're surprised to see her, they're surprised to see her as how she's looking. Right, Naomi's name is a expression, it's a term of endearment. It's sometimes you'll see it translated as pleasant. I think probably closer to how we would use it in English is sweetie. It's a term of endearment. Right? But her looks and her manner, her disposition has changed, and she's no longer Naomi, sweetie. She says, I'm bitter, I'm Mara. For the Lord has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me? Right? It's not just that she's had difficult circumstances come to her. Rather, she believes that it's the Lord's judgment upon her, and that makes what she's going through a double trial, what theologians call the double trial. Her suffering is enough. All of what she's been through is enough. But if the suffering means what she thinks it means, it makes her suffering so much worse. The Redeemer kinsman was a person who was an advocate for the one in need or for the one who died. And the Lord describes himself in relation to his people, Israel, as their Redeemer. He tells Moses, he sends Moses back to say to the people, the Lord is calling you out. He says, tell them. I promise them, I will redeem them with a mighty and an outstretched arm. But what hope do you have if your Redeemer, another way in which you could talk about it is your advocate. What hope do you have if your advocate shows up in court to testify against you? That's what she's saying she's experienced. If we live in a world in which it's every person for themselves, and we are left to deal with the brokenness of the world and with our own brokenness by our own hands, if we believe that we live in a world that is divided up between people who are either a victim or a victimizer, people who don't get what they deserve or get what they deserve, that the world is run by forces which are capricious like fate or vindictive like Chemosh, living in a world in which those are the only two options is a restless world. It is a world in which there is no peace. We want justice, but we need mercy. Can those two things be brought together? That's the big press and push in this first chapter, and the answer is yes. Yes, this is what the book of Ruth is all about. There is a blessing which rises above the kind of living in a world that's divided only between those two realities. In the book of Ruth, we find that there's something more than injustice and retribution. And that's the blessing. It's the great surprise of the book that reveals itself. It begins to crack open here in this first chapter. There's great affection between Naomi and her daughters-in-law. They love Naomi. They have compassion on her. And Naomi loves them. She doesn't want to drag them down. Her heart is for them, right, is revealed in that she's willing to let them go. She wants to send them away. And Orpah goes, but Ruth clings to Naomi. She says, do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you, for where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die. And there will I be buried. May the Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts me from you. Right? The blessing that overturns so much heartache is love. Love covers a multitude of sins. Ruth's love for Naomi, and even more, Ruth's love for the God of Israel, is something that is so remarkable here in this first passage. Right, this language that Ruth is speaking to Naomi is the language of covenant. It's binding language. It is willfully giving up one's freedom for the sake of another. And when you're confronted with that kind of love, what can you do? Well, it leaves us like Naomi as the passage ends. And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more. Just leaves us speechless. You don't have a comeback for that. As we move through Advent towards the celebration of Christmas, we should expect to learn more through the book of Ruth about the lengths to which God will go to demonstrate his love for us. And it should leave us dumbfounded. God's love should speak to the grief and the bitterness of this life. Right? It should visit us. It is a love that should redeem what is lost and give us a vision of such a hope and a promise that will leave our cynicism laughed at by the end of it, and over which we ourselves too will look back upon it and chuckle and roll our eyes at our doubt and our unbelief. Right? If we're sold on brokenness and bitterness, if we will not let ourselves be touched by the blessing that's offered, what hope is there for us? The promise is rest, and that's what we should find. This meal that we're going to celebrate is a foretaste of the rest to come. It is a pledge of rest. It is a provision of rest. It says to you and to me that the double trial of suffering is not ours to bear. He suffered for us. He clung and clings to us. He gives all of himself to us. Another reason we're in the book of Ruth is that it ends with a boy being born. Can a son be born? Can a son be born to take away all the brokenness and barrenness of the world? Yes. Do you know through whose line that son was born? Ruth's. As you receive the elements of the sacrament, hold him in your hands, hold the hope and the tangible promise of his love for you, because the Lord has visited his people and he has given himself for food.